Well, let's turn the clock back about 51 years or so to when you were a 20-year-old guy having a very good season for Toronto of the International League with Dick Williams as your manager and hopes of making it to the major leagues. When you heard the news that Dick Williams had been named the Red Sox manager, did you feel hopeful that you'd get a shot to make the big club?
I rather suspected I was going to get a shot. My recollection is that it was going to be a spring training battle, if you will, between me and Gary Wasluski and perhaps somebody else. And then I think over the winter they made a trade or two, and a couple of new guys came in. But yeah, I thought I was going to get a shot, and as it turns out, I had a pretty good spring and went north, as they say.
Well, and then opening game for the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. Here you are, ready to take the mound against the future Hall of Famer, Whitey Ford. Exciting, intimidating, or all of those things?
Oh, I think it was probably all of the above. I do seem to recall throwing a warm-up pitch out in the bullpen into the Marine Corps marching band, into the bass drum. I wouldn't suggest that I was a little hyped up, but others might differ.
And you had a rookie catcher, too, Russ Gibson, who had spent almost a decade in the minor leagues getting his first start as well.
I did, and rest his soul, Gibby was just a rock. And in fact, he looked like a rock. He was built like a rock. But he was my catcher in Toronto, and he was my catcher in New York.
Well, another rookie got you a little leg up early in the game when Reggie Smith hit a home run. And when I think about that team, it was such a core of talented young guys. I believe that Yaz, among the starters, was the oldest guy at 27, 28 years old.
I expect he probably was, unless you want to throw in some of the real gray beards like George Thomas and some of those guys, but I'm not sure you count them in the number when you're talking about the regulars, because I think George played a lot, but I'm not sure he was considered the starter.
You had to have so many things going through your mind in making that first start in the big leagues, your debut at Yankee Stadium. At what point in the game did you start thinking no-hitter or realize that you had a no-hitter going?
I think it was probably when all my buddies quit talking to me. It gets very lonesome in the dugout when you are doing something like that, and the boys played it just according to the script, and I don't think anybody said a word to me after about the sixth inning until Dick came out in the ninth and asked me if I was okay. What the hell that meant, I'm not sure.
Well, you almost lost it in the sixth inning. Bill Robinson hit a shot that went off your leg, and Joe Foy had to make a heck of a play over at third.
He did, and I can tell you that Robinson, that was a very delicate shot, because at that time my leg was about 4 inches in circumference. But he got it right on the screws, as they say, and I thought at first it was probably broken. But yeah, Joe made a great play on the ball, and that certainly was ticketed for center field when he left the bat.
And then they brought in Mickey Mantle to pinch hit in the game. That had to be a thrill to face the Mick.
It was interesting, Rich, because whoever it was that was up before that, I think hit a fly ball to the outfield, and I was still looking out in that direction as they were throwing the ball around when that fellow came on and announced, now batting for New York, number 7, Mantle. And I wasn't sure whether I should turn around and face him or just keep walking towards center field and leave. But thankfully, I think Mickey hit the first pitch. I think he hit it 400 feet, but luckily, it was 200 straight up and 200 back down.
So you get to the ninth inning. Joe Foy had hit a home run to give you a little bit of breathing room there. And you get to the ninth inning, and Tommy Tresh hit a bomb and one of the great catches out of many in the career of Carl Yastrzemski. What were you thinking at that moment as he made contact with that pitch?
Well, my first thought was it was going to wind up in the popcorn machine over the left field fence. But the next thing I thought of was when I saw number 8 headed for the wall and then dove and snow-coned the thing, my next thought was, yes, that's probably going to make you famous. And I've been telling him for the last half a century that it did, and I'm not sure he believes it.
I think the next batter flied out to Tony Canigliaro in right field, and then it was Elston Howard that broke up the magic and the no-hitter with that little hit into right field that Tony C. couldn't quite get to.
He did, and that was all Gibby's fault for calling the wrong pitch. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Now, you were saying in your email correspondence, though, that you've had time to think about it in the last 50 years, and maybe we're wrong about the way that game ended.
You could be, and actually I've sort of re-scripted the whole thing. It didn't take long. It's just one swing and miss, and boom, the game's over, and I got a no-hitter.
I do like that ending a whole lot better. Now, Ellie Howard would do it to you again about a week later, right, and keep you from getting a shutout.
He did. He took something off the Green Monster for a, I don't know if it was a long single or a double or something, but it knocked in a run, and I was certainly mindful to thank Ellie when he finally came over to Boston for all the headlines of mine that he had taken away.
So are you amused that 50 years later we're still talking about that game and, of course, that season, which was so memorable for New England fans?
Well, in one sense I am, except that over the years we've gone back to Fenway a few times. We went back for Tony C. night. We went back for the anniversary of Fenway, birthday of Fenway Park. And as I have come to better appreciate the sports scene in New England, I get less and less surprised, because those folks don't forget, and they're terrific, and they love a winner, and we finally gave them one.
Well, not only that, and I've wondered this a lot, and I know that you got such a great reaction when you were back for that Fenway 100 celebration. Given the Red Sox history up until 2004 of coming close so many times but never getting that World Series title, do you think in some way, Bill, it's possible that the fans loved what you did even more because you came so close to that no-hitter without quite getting there?
Rich, I've heard the theory that I'm the poster boy for almost but not quite, and I get it, and I appreciate it. I still would have preferred to have gotten him out, but yeah, I think there's some association there just based upon, you know, after this many years, the people that recall it at all recall it the way they want to, and that's as it should be. And if they think that might have been a spark that ignited the season, good. I'm all in.
You've been an attorney for many years, back where you grew up. Obviously now in the 50th anniversary, you're getting a lot more of these requests and even more people talking about it. But over those 50 years, on average, how many days would go by without someone bringing up what you did back in your 20s?
Oh, it happens from time to time, especially if somebody, you know, I still wear the pennant ring, and people notice that. Certainly the second week in April, I get phone calls and emails and things from various corners of the world, primarily in northeastern United States, but folks do recall.
Well, certainly we remember it very fondly here, and I have memories of it watching it, well, actually listening to it at the time, because we didn't get a lot of games on TV in those days, but also immortalized.
I thought you were going to say they hadn't invented it yet.
No, although I teach school now, and I've got students who are convinced that nothing was invented before 1998, so it's...
Oh, that's right.
It's entirely possible, but... My memories were solidified even more by the great record that was put together with Kenny Coleman's work. I'm sure, have heard a chance to listen to that through the years.
Oh, I absolutely have. Bless his heart. He was as good as anybody's ever been. I'm not sure Kenny ever got the recognition that was due him, but we know, the people in New England know, the people that knew him know, he was as good as anybody.
Well, Bill, it's a delight for us to have the chance to talk with you. We really appreciate you making time for us and helping us remember that 1967 season. Thanks for coming on with us, and we wish you continued good health.
Rich, thank you. I appreciate it very much.